Welcome to the Ashtanga Dispatch Yoga Podcast. I'm your host, Peg Mulqueen. One of the topics that we've been talking about in both our mentorship program and in our courses offered through the path is this idea of suffering as opportunity. I don't mean that we need to suffer or suffer on purpose, but they do tend to be like an initiation, preparing us often for just more initiations, of course, because let's face it, life is full of them. But also through those difficult times, we learn to lean on something greater within ourselves, something that's often only revealed through those difficulties. There's something in the struggle that helps ripen the spirit. And certainly that's been Patty Ivey's experience. Patty Ivey is the owner and founder of Down Dog Yoga, one of the hottest yoga studios in Washington, D.C., and I mean that both literally and figuratively. But after 20 years in the business, and her business in good hands, Patty and her husband Scott moved to a little cottage in the north, ready to embrace the next phase of their lives. It was then Patty was diagnosed with breast cancer. So not exactly the adventure she'd envisioned. And yet she now sees this as somewhat of a gift, opening her up to even greater potential. After years of always being a mover and a shaker, of doing, and mostly for others, at age 70, Patty is now learning how to be. And so I asked Patty to come speak at one of our mentorship sessions and tell us her story. The group and I was so moved and inspired by her talk that I decided to also share with you here today. I hope you enjoy today's episode with one of the greatest leaders I know, my friend of 22 years, Patty Ivey.
Let me start by saying this. First, thank you so much. I'm really glad to be here. And it's always, you know, Peggy and I don't get to connect very often. I haven't seen Megan in years, but, you know, I said to her the other day that it doesn't matter how many years go by and we've been through ups, downs, all arounds and have grown together in a lot of different ways and yet in different ways. And I still consider her to be one of my closest and dearest friends, but, you know, also I would say I'll call her a trusted advisor. So you guys are so lucky to be in this group with Peggy and with Megan. I've watched Megan grow up. My God, she reminded me that I gave her her first job at Down Dog Yoga, working the front desk. So, I mean, I'm telling you, I've seen her grow from, you know, young kid struggling with acne to like this incredibly graceful. She's just such a graceful, beautiful young woman. And so that's been, I love watching that happen. So thank you. I'm happy to be here. And I first want to say, you know, typically when somebody says to me, tell me your story, my initial response is I always want to say, which one? I mean, I've lived a long life. I'm 70 years old. There's lots of stories in my mind until I came upon the latest one that I'm, you know, having right now, which was my diagnosis with cancer and being on a journey with that. And I say that because when Peggy was talking about the things that we go through in life, the challenges that we meet, we don't get to know how it's going to shape us until we're already there and starting to have our look back. And that's the interesting part of all of this. So when I look at now where I am and in this journey with cancer, I feel as though I'm in the stage where, oh, this is where all the pieces are coming together. This is where every chapter of my life weren't actually the stories, but there's like an umbrella of the bigger story of my life that I'm living into, which is really getting a lot of clarity around what matters to me and what my life message is. Like, what's it all about? What's my true purpose? And I think we always think that we know what our true purpose is, but the more we go through, the more it starts to refine itself so that it's crystal clear that when we speak about it, we know exactly what our intention is. So it was in August of 2023 that I received my cancer diagnosis. And the interesting part was it took me a long time to decide. I still own Down Dog. Down Dog's in Washington, D.C. I now live outside of Boston on the beach. When my husband and I decided enough was enough, and I didn't want to deal with the stress of running a business anymore, and we were going to move and leave it in good hands to have that happen. So I thought I was riding off into the sunset, not as a retirement, but as a, well, what's next? What am I going to get into next, right? And that quickly got stopped with my diagnosis with cancer. And I remember when I heard the news, I was so shocked because I could not wrap my brain around how I got cancer. I'm healthy. I eat all the healthy things. I do yoga every day. I do all the things that it takes to stay in good shape, to live a good life. How did cancer get in my body? And what's the most interesting about it is, well, let me go back for a second. So I was stunned when I heard, and I actually thought that they got it wrong. And I went for a second opinion for a number of different reasons, parts of which I'll share of why I did that, which I think are important. But I thought for sure when I went for my second opinion that they were going to say, no, that's not right. They did another mammogram, did all the things, and that they were going to tell me that I was cancer-free. But I wasn't. And in fact, they caught another bit of cancer that the first doctors missed. So here I was. And being the person that I was used to being, which was a high performer, just, you know, like kicking down doors, meeting every challenge as it came. And a lot of it, you know, Peggy and I were talking about had a lot to do with the generation that we were brought up in. Now, I'm a little older than Peggy, but nevertheless, we were raised, you know, like not raised, but in that generation of being brought through life, there was nothing easy for women. A woman coming in and owning her own business was not the norm and was not really acceptable by either men or women, by the way, a lot of women. We were in a very small percentage of women who were doing anything in business, but especially in a small business like we were in. And I went right into that high-performing mode. Like, I'm just gonna push my way through this. I'm gonna do what I always did. And that's the attitude that I took. I'm gonna do what I always do. And I remember saying to the doctors, like, I don't wanna have anything to do with this cancer. It has nothing to do with me. I'm not going to identify with it. I'm never gonna say I have cancer. I'm never gonna put a hashtag fuck cancer sign anywhere. I'm never going to put hashtag I'm a cancer survivor. I'll do everything that you tell me to do. Like, I'm not going to tell you that I'm just going to drink celery juice and it's all going to work out. I will go the full protocol, whatever you tell me to do. Your job is to get it out of my body. My job is to be over at my house doing my voodoo and we'll figure it out together. But I don't want to talk about it. And I said, and I have to know that you're going to walk shoulder to shoulder with me, that I'm participating in this. and I'm just not going to look at it. And that's what I, and you know, that was very common for me in life, to put things over in my scary pile. I'll just put it over there and I'm not going to look at it. I'm going to separate it from myself. And that was the approach that I was going to take. I immediately went, and I was pretty much close to vegetarian, but I immediately went fully vegetarian. I would not put a drop of olive oil in my mouth, like nothing. I was literally eating, you know, I might as well have been eating cardboard, because I got that freaked out about cancer and thinking that, you know, like if I changed my diet even more and went to more extremes, that that would be helpful. And I got to the point where, you know, all of a sudden when the whole journey started, like they tell you that you have cancer, and they don't waste any time. From that moment on, I went and had probably in a 2-week period, 10 different scans, echocardiograms. I can't tell you how much blood work I had done. And, you know, every time, like you're waiting for more news. What? And sometimes it wasn't at the time great news. And like, you know, have an echocardiogram and they say, oh, there's something that we see fluid around your heart. We got to do another one because, you know, chemotherapy impacts the heart. It's a lot of strain. So going through all that, and within 2 weeks of finding out I had cancer, I was already in chemotherapy. It was very quick. And what I started to discover was that I couldn't, as much as I wanted to not have anything to do with it, I couldn't do it that way because it was right there in my face. I was doing it every day. I was in Mass General Hospital in Boston 3 days a week. There was one thing after another that I had to fill in or go for another test or, you know, whatever it took. And it was like, all right, like I needed to start figuring out how I was going to, integrate this without giving into cancer as becoming a part of me. And nothing I chose, and I really want to say this to you because I think it's important. There's nothing that I think at that time that I chose consciously. It was a very unconscious surrendering that started to happen. And I feel as though I wouldn't have had the ability to do that had I not had 20 years of practice on my mat, living in a way that I was living through principles of yoga that as best I could that worked for me, but was able to just start naturally. Something started to happen organically where I was like, I cannot high perform my way out of this one. It's not going to work. And I had to really think about, well, what does it feel like to be in surrender? What does it really feel like to be in deep rest? And I didn't know. I didn't know, because rest to me was not rest. And I naturally just pulled in and away from everybody and everything. I got very quiet. And I didn't tell anybody. I remember I told one, other than my husband, I told one person. And I said to this one person, the only reason I told her is because she's the woman who's running my company. And I felt like she was the only one that needed to know. Yeah. To make sure that that was, because I've got to step out completely. Like, I'm out, I'm disappearing. You're the only person who's going to know this. And that was like that for a long time, for a few months.
I just want to bring attention to something that you said, because I think it's just so important when we talk about that presence. And you were saying the idea that you want to just put it in another pile.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I have felt that way. I think we've all felt that way. You know, we want to kind of separate ourselves from it. And I think it's like so good. You don't want it to define you. At the same time, I heard you say like integrate. And we've been talking in this group about samadhi, and like, you know, mm-hmm. We've been going through some of the Yoga Sutras and kind of talking about that concept. And oftentimes we think of samadhi as like this bliss, and, you know, and it can be for sure, but it's also flowing with what comes your way. It's being able to move through life with it, integrating it rather than.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny that you say bliss, because I just read something or listened to something the other day where the asana and alignment was referred to as bliss. And that's part of like the Jiva Mukti method. And they called it a sacred geometry, you know, and the integration piece is vital. And I had this awareness that I had one teacher who said to me, and she was my Ayurvedic doctor, that's why I told her. And she said to me, Patty, you have a gift that's been put right in front of you. And I know it's hard to see it as such, but this is really your time that if you can move through this journey with she called it a smoothness, with a richness and a smoothness, that this is going to be the next step up into your spiritual journey. And I always knew that I was meant for a deeper spiritual journey, but I was also the person who was so enmeshed in the dregs of humanity and the suffering that I always had trouble pulling myself out of it to rise above it. So no matter how much work I was doing, there's a difference when you have to get an awareness of what does it actually mean to level up at a soul level. You can't just change your thinking or not look at that. You can change how you see things, how you see people, but until you get underneath the belly of it and do that soul vibration raise up, nothing can really change. And I just remember thinking, well, gosh, like, why do I want to? Because, you know, as a high performer, I want to know, I want to know, I want to know. I want to know where I'm headed. I wanted to know what direction I'm going. I want to know what's next. That's just how my mind worked. And for me to have to consciously, and I did, I took it on maybe as a conscious challenge, we could say. I took it on as, what would it be like if I sat with it and did nothing? And that every time I'm doing nothing and just sitting with it, that I just pay attention to what's happening. Or if I get that pull to want to do something, that I just see that as interesting, but there's nothing to be done. And that's what it became. I pulled away from everybody. I was quiet. I spent a lot of time alone. Unless I was in the presence of, you know, going to chemotherapy or something like that, I really spent a lot of time alone. I didn't talk to a lot of people. I was completely off social media. I just didn't share. I didn't want to. It felt very private, a very private journey to me that I needed to process. And I was saying to Peg that there was a right off the start in the beginning, especially when I was going through chemo, those beginning stages, I felt like I was in the bottom of the ocean. I had this feeling all day long, and I could all day long, like I was sitting in water and things were happening around me and it was super quiet. Got very quiet. And I was like, well, and my mind was quiet. And that was the thing that was so fascinating to me. I've never experienced a mind as quiet as I had it during that time. And one would think the opposite. One would think there would be fear and it's not that things didn't come up, but there was this ability to just be in, like, I felt like I was immersed in a deeper experience. And I don't know what called me to that. I feel like I'm really lucky, and I feel like I've been that way my whole life, where I get pulled into something and I just wanted to immerse myself in the study of that. That's almost what it was like, you know, to be sitting in the water. And then Peggy and I were speaking and she was sharing with me, my God, like that's the thing. That's like consciousness. That's the oneness. And
the womb. It's the womb.
That's the womb.
It's the womb. It's turning inward.
And that was the feeling. Like, I felt safe there. I didn't know where I was going, and it didn't matter. I knew something bigger was coming my way. And I wanted to not stop or even try to control what that journey or process was. I really, and I still feel this way because I'm not even close to being done yet. I mean, you know, the physicalness of the treatment is coming to an end. But I still have this feeling that there's going to be a lot more coming up after I get through that.
I was just wondering, I mean, we rarely ever talk to anybody. We usually talk to somebody in retrospect. They talk about something that happened in looking back, right? So there's some distance there. You're one of the first people, I think, that I've ever been able to speak with like this, and for you to be able to really share on this level from in it, not from outside of it, not after it, beyond it. There must have been moments, and I would love for you to talk to that if that's the case, moments of these, I want to say, revealings, you know, like deeper layers, like the deeper layers, the revealings must have come in.
You know, there were definitely some, and I think the biggest ones really in the beginning had to do with me, where I would look back and be like, oh my God, where I actually was very aware of where I had put so much time and energy into the unnecessary or the things that we waste time on. And I had a real sense, and I still to the, like, not so much like right now, but I had a real sense with time. I thought about time a lot. Not time from thinking it was running out or I was going to die, but from the possibility that that could be. And where am I putting my time? What am I wasting my time on? Who am I spending my time with? What are the conversations I'm spending? I really could not stop thinking about time and where I was willing to go and be with and converse with or share with at that level. And that started shifting a lot of things for me. When you get a sense of time and what does and does not matter. And the other thing was, and this is a big one, is that throughout the process, there's no doubt that I had to, what I wasn't expecting was to have to advocate for myself in the way that I did throughout the entire treatment. To this day. And I learned that, God, I've never really, I've always been a great advocate for everybody else. You know, stand for everyone else until they could stand for themselves. But I didn't stand up for me often. And I got to see that. And let me tell you something, cancer, it was like, I said to Peggy, there was like, you know, you ever see those memes where they say, you know, me, keep your mouth shut, don't say a thing. And they say, me also. I just think it's really interesting. And next thing you know, my mouth was open and I was speaking. And I, from day one to this day, have not kept my mouth closed when it comes to advocating. And so I've learned through this journey, the best gift yet is how to stand up for myself, how to advocate for myself, how my advocating for myself naturally advocates for others, and not being afraid, not being left with the residuals when we stand up for ourselves of like feeling the guilt or they're not going to like me or all the stuff that comes with that is like no more. Because if I don't stand up for me, no one's standing up for me. And that's not necessarily true, but the most important person to stand up for you is you. And that was one of the biggest things that I learned. And really clearing out in my life, one more. Who shows up for you and who doesn't? And I say that because the people who didn't show up for me and the people who did, it was shocking, because the ones that I thought were my friends and would always show up for me didn't show up at all. But when I really looked back, I learned, well, wait a minute, if I really look at that and look back, they actually never showed up for me. I thought they did. Like, I learned that where I was listening from and where I was looking from, what I was here, it wasn't there. It was what I was turning it into. It was how I wanted to see people. It's how I wanted to experience them, but it wasn't true. So nothing was new and nothing had changed. It wasn't like anyone that showed up for me in life all of a sudden didn't. It was more, oh, they've actually never been there for me. They've never showed up for me.
But also, Patty, I'm wondering how many times are, and I think this happens with, you know, with strong women, especially, we're used to handling it by ourselves. We handle a lot for other people. And so we're so used to handling and doing and carrying that it's a very different experience to have that sense of vulnerability and, you know, be in that place where actually it'd be nice to be the one carried a bit too.
Well, yeah. And what happens is, and I know you have probably experienced this too, is that when you are strong and people see you as strong, they don't think you need help. So they just think you're fine. I heard that a lot. And people would say, I think about you all the time. Well, okay, but I don't know that. Like, if you're not calling to check in on me, I don't know that. But it became a very isolating experience at the same time, because people thought, you've got, there's a lot of, you've got this, bicep curl emojis, kick cancer, just like you do everything else, kick cancer's ass. And none of that was resonating for me. For the reasons that you said, like, I didn't want to fight with cancer. I didn't want to kick it in the ass. I didn't want to be boxing gloves on. I wanted to figure out a way to walk side by side with it and acknowledge that it was there, but to not let it take me down the rabbit hole or to let it become a part of who I was. I want to just share this a little bit. When I had a couple of coaching clients that I wrapped up what I was doing with them, and I told them what was going on with me, and they were like, how can we be there for you? And I was like, that thing I told, been working with you and saying, go do that. And you were too afraid to do it. Well, then go and do that. Like, that was my ask. Like, go and do the things for yourself. Like my team, hold up the mission. Go and have the uncomfortable conversations that you've been afraid to have. Like, that felt like a gift to me.
I feel like when you describe it, there's such clarity. The discernment is so clear, I guess, because the stakes are so high. But what I'm taking away from it is you don't have to also wait until.
No.
Right?
Well, I also discovered, it was interesting. No, you don't have to wait. Often that's what happens. Mm-hmm. That we don't know what we don't know. And, sometimes we'll hear about someone else's tragedy and everybody will be like, oh my God. And we start changing everything because we've been so impacted for about 48 hours, a week, if you're lucky. And then we go back to our shenanigans again. And, both my mother and my brother died of, cancer, nothing like, what I have, but my point is that I had things close to me, and we don't take it in. We think we're invincible or it's just part of being human, but we don't have to wait. We really don't have to wait. It really is a choice. And I was in, and I'm still in this, high performer entrepreneur group. And I had to say to them, you know what, guys, I got to check out of this because all they want to do is more, more, more. How can I 10X? How can I do more? And I just, it wasn't sitting right with me. There was a conflict for me of being and doing. And that's always where we get caught up, you know, is are we being or are we doing? And so what I've really gotten from that piece is that I've always been interested in being, and I think I've been being, but there's always still this doing. But what's gotten crystal clear for me, like when I've talked to you about my cancer journey now being the big umbrella of the life story that's taking me somewhere else, is the importance of knowing what your true purpose in life is. And that gives me rest. That gives me calm because of this. Like when we're truly working from a greater sense of understanding how life works, we don't push up against anything anymore. When we work from a bigger purpose of, you know, there's that expression, be up to something bigger than yourself, right? And a lot of people stop up at be up to something bigger. And that's a mistake. Because it's really about being up to something bigger than yourself. Because that has a wish for the world and a promise for the world, right? And I think that's the important piece, is that when we're really being of service to something, it's not a draining experience. And it really takes you on a very different journey. Like I'm always, you know, arguing with a guy that I had as my coach, is that, you know, I don't see mission and vision and purpose as the same thing. I think that the bigger purpose is, what's your promise to the world? Why are you here? That's the intention of the yogi, right? What's your intention? The intention of the yogi, which is what I am really getting now, is what are you giving to the world rather than what are you taking away from it? And most people spend a lot of time wanting to take away from the world and not give back to the world, because there's not an understanding of how life works, which brings a trusting that when you give, you receive. When you give, you receive. And that's just a natural part of the journey. I mean, that's what I'm experiencing.
I'm wondering, like, I think of this for myself. A lot of times when that giving, that purpose, that real clear, like we can feel it very intensely and know it, and then be scared as hell to share it. You know, like all the insecurities come, all the self-doubt starts to cloud up that.
Yeah.
And what I feel like is having one of these moments that you're having, one, like it's sort of, it shows how like trivial, I don't know, it doesn't trivialize, but and all of a sudden they just seem so much less, like the purpose feels like so much more. And these feel like nuisances.
Absolutely.
No longer fears. They're nuisances almost.
No longer fears. Like, and I really feel that way. Like I'll have my moments of fear where I'll hear something new that somehow I missed with something that the doctor said, not that, but it might knock me off center for a minute, but I'm able to work through it and find my way back. Like everything has become about not putting things in the scary pile, taking what I listening to everything, not being afraid to look at it, and then integrating it and figuring out a way to move forward with it with a positive attitude and a positive mindset. Everything else is just bullshit. You know, it's just, it doesn't even matter. Everything else is not important. And when you can tap into that, it's just such a better way of, I don't even know what I want to do moving forward, but I also never thought that I'd want to, the last thing I wanted to speak about was cancer. But now I'm feeling like that might be my thing. And not so much to focus on cancer, but how to work with people to shift the lens that they're looking through. And to look through a lens that offers hope, offers You know, hope is the most important thing. Like, we have to be able to have hope in life, or what's the point? Faith can look any way you want. Like, to me, faith is not attached to religion. You know, so hope, faith, possibility, and our own ability to create life exactly the way we want it. And I believe with my cancer, like, there is a report, right? I got the diagnosis. That's the reported life. And now it's up to me to build the created life.
I really appreciate you coming and you sharing, and everyone here for being present. And I when I said to Patty, and I described all of you, and I said, this is your group. Like, these are the women that, they are receptive, they are courageous, they are there and present and with each other. Like, I mean, and I do think it's, you brought up this so several times, that it's hard for people to show up, not just with cancer, but with anything. Like, it's just so hard.
It's hard for people. They just can't show up. They don't even know how to do it.
Oh, it's just in the fear that surrounds it. But when you get a group of brave and beautiful women like this that, you know, just do it no matter what, it's powerful, really, really powerful. So thank you, Patty.
Yeah, it takes courage to even join the group. So keep going. Yeah. And I hope to hear more of your stories and what you're up to. And I feel really grateful that I got to be here and spend some time with you today. So thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to today's episode with Patty Ivey. If you'd like to learn more about Patty, please visit her website, thepattyivey.com. Also, Megan and I are beginning our next Yoga Sutra course in April. We'll be diving into the second chapter, which is all about practice and, you guessed it, suffering as opportunity. And if you're interested in joining our mentorship program, fall registration begins in August. Visit ashtangadispatch.com to learn more. Today's episode was edited and produced by me, Peg Mulqueen, music by Mark Pilley. Thanks again.